Father's Day is almost here, big man.
And if you haven't got Dad a gift yet, we've got every dad covered.
At Lowe's!
For big dads like me, there's big men's tops only $14.95.
For casual dads, there's polo tops only $9.95.
The classic dad's favourite, Hawaiian shirts from only $19.95.
And for active dads, their shorts are only $19.95.
Plus, there's 20% off gift cards for this Thursday and Friday.
For last minute gift ideas, we've got every dad covered.
At Lowe's!
I got work to do. I got work, baby.
Got work to do.
I got a gig.
Got work to do.
I got work to do.
Got work to
got
do.
So much work. Yeah, yeah.
Across Australia, this is Let's Talk Business with John Stanley and Scott Hayward. Thanks to Officeworks, helping you make bigger things happen.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to 3AW, 2GB, 2CC, 4BC stations across Australia. It is Let's Talk Business. We've got a lot on our plate tonight, including for those people who are on either side of the divide when it comes to employment and dismissals in small business. And you hear from people talking about how they've been wrongly dismissed. You hear from employers saying, it's really hard for me to let someone go for whatever reason. The law makes it difficult. We've got a special on that because there has been some intervention from the Small Business Ombudsman who's recommending some changes. We're going to go through that. Also, how you can market via email. This is going to be a bit of a tutorial tonight that I think you're going to really enjoy. But Scott Hayward, our finance guru, has he been spending the weekend beavering away, doing people's tax, doing people's accounts, adding up the numbers? Or has he been at the snow with a whole lot of other people who've been at all the Australian snowfields? I think the answer is B. So maybe turn your radio down a little bit because he's going to burst out of the speakers. This bloke's been on the... I think he's been on the skis all day. Scotty.
Good afternoon or good evening, John. The fact of the matter is now is that there is now no business like snow business, and we're going to have a lot of drivers leaving the mountain tonight from Perisher, Threadbow, Falls Creek, Mount Hotham, Mount Buller. Of course, ski resort Perisher, I think they're going to have record numbers this year. In 2015, their business was sold for $177 million by new US multinational Vail, and that has now made snowmaking machines that guarantee snow throughout school holidays and all through the winter, driving what is a snow $2 billion a year industry. And if you are coming back from Perisher, I'd love to hear from you. It's $150 a day a ticket, which means that's a bit different to when you're getting a Mikey or if you're travelling around on public transport. But the good thing tonight, John, was that I was lucky enough to speak with Hans Grimace's wife, Lottie. He passed last year, but he was a foundation member of Mount Buller. He built the first T-bar rope in 1961. He is considered a legend not only across Mount Buller, but across the entire ski network. His son Anton's represented Australia in multiple Winter Olympics, and she's a small business owner. And I had a long chat with her today about what it's like having a seasonal business, what it's like running a small business, the Pench and Grimace restaurant, bar, and accommodation resort. And she said that they have meetings and say that it's such a short season, so it can be so challenging. And unlike other industries, whether you're running a cafe or if you're running, you know, a gym in Sydney or in Brisbane, you know, the weather is such an influential part of the success of their business. And she said that her and Hans would sit down at Easter and say, we have to run this business like we're a farmer. We don't know what the weather's going to bring, but we have to hope for the best. And I can tell you, and you were right, that I did have a ski today with my wife and with a friend from Perth, and met a person from Queensland as well. So don't think that this is just a Victorian and New South Wales event. People actually will travel and be part of it. And she said that they sit down at Easter and say, okay, what's the snow going to be like? What's climate change? Like, climate change is a huge factor in ski resorts. How many lifts will we open? Is the sun going to shine? What are some of the effects on business? But the big issue that they experience, which I'm looking forward to talking to Kim about shortly, is rostering staff. It can be really difficult. You know, the ski resorts are about fun, and they're about family, and they're about friends, and they're about having a good time. And getting the right seasonal employees is a massive challenge. Sometimes you get overseas employees. You've got to manage stock, you've got to manage costs in an isolated location. That can be tough. Lottie said to me today that she said getting stock up here in a timely manner is difficult. She said we have to put a lot of stock in storage, we have to spend a lot of money on refrigeration, and we then have to then make sure that we run out of stock at the end of the season. But I think the consensus that we've had from the 2018 and the 2019 numbers is that the consensus across a lot of ski resorts across Australia is that we have attracted a lot of overseas visitors. China in particular are promoting Australia. And I know you mentioned on China in the opening, but China are particularly saying, come to Australia to ski. It's more affordable, particularly with our weaker dollar, 67 US cents. And it's great enjoyment. It's low crime. It's a lot of fun. And a lot of other areas are enjoying the benefits of their homes, cafes, Jindabyne, Bright, Jamieson. They're now enjoying the fact that this multi-billion dollar industry, which, as I suggested earlier, is in the high country of Victoria, is a $30 billion industry with a 20% growth. Now, that's something that Scott Morrison's not discussing, and I think that he needs to address seasonal sports, seasonal activities, seasonal economies, to say I should put some money into this because this is where the growth's coming from, rather than just talking about, you know, the mundane day-to-day stuff.
131873 is the number. If you want to jump on the phone, if you're actually in the car and you want to back up what you've just been hearing about all of this, can I just speak up on behalf of probably, the rest of Australia? Now, people listening to us in Queensland, they've had a nice sunny day. They haven't had this very cold weather. So they're going, what's all... good luck to you. But for people who don't like, you know, strapping planks on their feet and sliding down hills...
When you say strapping planks on your feet, now this again is showing your age, John. You're back to the 1960s because Hans Grimmis would have been probably strapped. He actually skied with his dog and he had a plank of wood on his feet. Now you can actually get something that's like a boot and a ski that's fitted. And the snowboarders who have reinvented the economy...
I'm making the point that for non-skiers it looks a bit silly. But I'm just trying to make the point here that there are huge swathes of people who've spent the weekend freezing. It's been freezing cold. Whatever you've been doing out there in the cold, try to get around the place, try to rug up. So for us, it hasn't been all that flash. But I know, I'd love to hear from you if you're actually driving home, you've been involved in the weekend, because it has been pretty spectacular. And you can tell that this bloke's absolutely flying, because it has been, they haven't had conditions like this for a very long time, have they?
Well, that's right. And, you know, once the snow's gone, effectively resorts have to deal with maybe somewhere between a 50-day resort period of time. They might get 120 days. But house prices in Jindabyne and Cooma have grown by more than 50% since 2008. And that's well above the average of regional New South Wales, because they've seen an influx of investors wanting to come in since the global financial crisis and invest near ski resorts. So I'm certainly suggesting that this is not necessarily an investment that people would make where they would fundamentally make money. It's definitely a lifestyle issue. But Thredbo and Perisher in the 1980s were employing, you know, very few people. Now we're talking about a multi-billion dollar industry where a lot of people are getting jobs, they're getting the opportunity, and, you know, it's the same as if you're running a water park in the summer. You're closed right now, so they have the same seasonal transition. But to have such 2 years of such fantastic snow is fantastic for not only for people who, good for the economy. But the other thing as well is that, from my point of view with the snow with my wife, is that as soon as we get up here, we feel like we're on holidays in 1 minute, because you're in a completely different landscape, you're in a completely different environment, you've got a completely different group of friends, you've got other people that who you've met over the years, and the friendship just connects. Whereas if you go to a holiday resort such as, you know, a Fiji or a Bali, you know, it might take you 3 or 4 days to transition down and relax and try and get back into the mode. Whereas as soon as you hit the snowfields, in my opinion, or if you're a snowboarder, you go straight into, I'm relaxed, I'm in a different environment, and I can now start to commit to feeling relaxed and enjoying life. And I think that's something that a lot of people don't realise, particularly people who've never skied or snowboarded before.
You mentioned earlier, you talked about people coming from China, and I want to touch on this because it's a very big issue. It's still rolling at the moment, the issue of our relationship with China, how that affects individual businesses. And I want to put the question out to people in relation to that, particularly people who've got, you know, business links with China. You're saying that there are people coming out from China, that this is one of the targets that they're trying to get Chinese tourism to our ski fields?
Yeah, well President Xi, who he wants to be, in terms, he's the Chinese president, he wants China to be the number one Winter Olympics winner of gold medals in northwest of Beijing in Chiang'e in 2022. He has ordered 300 million countrymen and women to take up snow sports right now. So he is putting so much money into snow and into his, I suppose you could say, his well, his population, I'm going to give you money, countrymen and women, take up snow, and I want you to be the best, yeah. so that you're in Beijing in 20... And China love being the best, but the fact of the matter would be that the Chinese skiing market is so small. They haven't got snow, so they have to go to France. They've got to come here. So they've got to figure out where exactly they're going to go. They can look at the Swiss, they can look at the Italians, and Australians who have been, you know, a little bit slower in terms of skiing and have got, you know, we encourage beginners and we encourage it yep. as a hobby, but we probably haven't encouraged as much as a real sport because we've got rugby, we've got footy, we've got tennis, we've got cricket. We're distracted by so many other sports, and the cost and the short period of time you can ski in Australia is different. So I think that the Chinese will be an absolute juggernaut, and with no disrespect to anybody that I've sent up here, I've never seen more Chinese skiing the mountain at Mount Buller than I have today.
Well, that brings us to the story of the week, which is the big story of what's happening with the trade wars with China and the US, and in particular what we've heard coming out of Western Australia with Andrew Hastie raising questions about China's rise and that we're essentially we're asleep at the wheel. We're not taking enough notice of what they're doing in terms of their ambition and the potential threat that they might pose. Now, I noticed in the last couple of days, first of all, you've had all the political leaders coming out saying, oh, you've got to be careful saying these things. We need to be much more diplomatic. You've had Dave Sharma, who's the new Liberal MP in the Sydney seat of Wentworth. Now, he's a former senior diplomat. He's backed what Hastie said in terms of this. So what do we do? Because we've got this genuine concern about the rise of China. On the other hand, these economic links, which are huge in terms of the mining boom, but at the basic level, and you would be dealing with people every day. I do. I'm not an accountant. I'm not a finance guru, but I talk to people who have got businesses that are working in China, that have got factories in China, that are having stuff manufactured in China, that are importing from China. Those links at that basic business level are enormous. So I'm wondering what those people... You may have some thoughts on this. We took some calls during the week. As you hear all of this, what do you think? What do you make of it? Because these businesses, and you know, they are working over there with China, and they'd be looking at all these huge geopolitical waves waving over the top of them and wondering what impact this is going to have on my business.
All right, let's look at the landscape there, John. In the last week... New Zealand, Thailand and India have cut interest rates by 0.25%. We had our meeting last week from the RBA. They kept rates on hold, leaving our interest rate from the RBA at 1%. The fact of what meaning that has for the average Australian is that, yes, our mortgage repayments have gone down. If I'm investing in a term deposit as a small business owner, then I'm not going to get as much return, so I need to look at alternatives, which in some case could be property or shares. But the macro picture that you're talking about, John, is very important. We're in an environment where our dollar has fallen. We're now, you know, we're 10-year low, 67 US cents. So that manufacturer in China is really struggling on not only trade wars, but he's also got a weak dollar when he's importing that good. So he's got a double whammy at the moment. So I've got a mate of mine who he has water heaters that he attaches to caravans. And he's importing from China. He's been over to the manufacturer. And when the dollar was 80 cents, happy days. Now at 67 cents, he may make a decision where he might say, I'm not going to import the amount of water heaters that I would have in the last 12 to 18 months. I might just hold back, which then again has an impact on the Australian economy, which is also a factor.
But if you sat and talked to him, because this is what our listeners would be thinking as they're hearing that, they think, have you sat and talked to him and said, is there any way you could manufacture those water heaters here or part of those water heaters here so that you don't have to bring them in from China? Because they hear this, it's a heavy product that's being manufactured there. It's got to be put on a plane, presumably, shipped out here, go through customs and arrive. So there's got to be a cost there. So, I mean, obviously his production costs are very low. Do you ever have conversations with people about trying to do it here, whether that might be in any way feasible?
I think a lot of small business owners in Australia struggle with the minimum wage, and that's a big factor that he's experienced. He and his wife, his Black Diamond Supplies, they try and source the cheapest product because Australians are still tight. Our mentality is we have not felt the impact at our bank accounts from the two interest rate cuts. Yes, not all the banks passed it all on, except for, I think, Macquarie were the only ones that passed on the 0.25 for two. But Macquarie represent less than 5% of the Australian home loan market. So he was struggling with the fact that, well, if people aren't feeling wealthy, which they haven't until the rate cuts occurred, and with no disrespect, a coalition government, because people were very concerned about franking credits and gearing, I think he hasn't felt that impact, but I don't think he can afford to make it in Australia just yet. But that may change if our dollar continues to fall, which in my opinion, it probably will.
Yep. And then there's the other issue of just the relationship with China and whether we take a tougher line with China, because I saw one line that if they decided to retaliate, they could put us into recession like that. So we've got to...
Well, our share market dropped 5% in 4 days in the last 10 days, John, and that was really tough for a lot of clients. It was tough for a lot of retirees who were worried about not only the income, but the fact that a geopolitical environment with Donald Trump having a bad day and all of his communication on Twitter is sending global markets into turmoil is a major frustration for me as a financial advisor.
131873 is our number. You can also get us via the web. You can go on email and go to 3w.com.au, 2gb.com, 4bc.com.au, wherever you might be, whatever the weather's like. You might be very, very cold. You might be like a huge swathe of our audience right through Queensland thinking, glad it's here. Yeah, what perfect one day. What is it? Great one day, perfect the next. I've got it wrong now. Is that it? That's very good.
Yeah. That's Gold Coast.
Yeah, that's the one.
Well, Queensland.
So, well, that's the whole of Queensland at the moment. Or people like Scott who love it when it gets very cold and you can go and slide down the side of mountains. So
on planks of wood. That's the last
planks
time you
of
skied.
Wood. That's what. That's
yeah, that's
right.
Ridiculous.
On planks of wood.
So that means I can now put my next door neighbour's fence. I can say, why would I bother with wood? I can
why
just put
you?
My skis up. Yeah, I can just put my skis up, and you wouldn't know the difference if
exactly.
I was your neighbour.
131873. Look, how hard is it to dismiss someone if you're a small business? This has been a long-running issue and a lot of complaints about this. Maybe there's a breakthrough coming. We'll deal with that shortly. It is Let's Talk Business for Officeworks, helping you make bigger things happen at 21 past 6. 131873 is the number. 2gb.com, 3w.com.au, 4bc.com.au. Daryl is in Pakenham. Hello to you, Daryl. You got Daryl there? Is he there
I'm
now?
Here. Can you hear me?
Yes, Daryl. How are you?
I am fantastic. I've just spent the weekend trying to organise things in Australia. I import from China and I can get things done. I can go to China. I can see the factory. I can organise things. I can get samples done. I can get it through customs on the ship, customs into a warehouse before I can even get a quote here in Australia. So the opportunities for Australians is massive. We just need a different mindset of actually working and delivering on your promises. And as much as we criticise the importing from China, at least they deliver on time.
Yep.
And it's quality control. You can have quality control issues around the corner. It's just an absolute...
Of course.
It does my head in. I've just spent the last 20-odd hours over the weekend trying to organise things because lazy Australians won't do their bloody job.
All right. Okay.
I'm going to throw this at you, Daryl. I understand your business model. I understand the fact that you're importing from China. We've got the US trade war at the moment. We've got some political instability. We've got a falling Australian dollar. If our dollar started to fall further, would you invest in Australian employees rather than continue to import from China?
I've tried to do that. I can't get Australians to understand the importance of working to get a job done rather than working from 9 to 5. They're more worried about how much they're going to get paid rather than working for what they're going to get paid. And it's hard. I have kids in my 20s, so I understand the ethos. Everybody thinks they should be on a couple of $1,000 a week. If they go to university, they think they should be on more. They don't understand that they've got to be worth something to an employer so the employer can pay them.
Yep.
It's just really hard.
All right. Good. Thank you very much for your call, Daryl, because we had a lot of calls along these lines during the week on the night show, and it just demonstrates the extent to which we're interlocked with China. People who are doing business like Ben, who've got it all set up there, it's working very well for them, but then you've got this massive overhang of the relationship with China and the threat it might pose, where people like Andrew Hastie and Dave Sharma and others are raising those issues. We'll take some more calls on that and keep discussing these issues as we go through the evening. 131873. Before we go to our next guest, very important one, let's get a question from Ben, who's on the Gold Coast. Hello, Ben.
Yeah, good evening, gentlemen. China seems to devalue their currency. They're utilising third world populace to be able to manufacture their goods on cents and the dollar. But every time they devalue, my gold goes up. So is gold the best way for me to hedge my bets against China's deliberate devaluation?
gold as a share or as an investment, as a commodity, is generally a safe haven when there's instability. We saw that through the global financial crisis. If you saw it through September 11, people will rush to gold because they're feeling uncertain about commodities, they're feeling uncertain about retail stocks, they're feeling uncertain about banks and financial instruments. We've seen Newcrest go up enormously. St Barbara also on the Australian Stock Exchange gone up a lot. However, when economic stability recovers and when economic stability looks a lot more sound, which at the moment with the US-China trade wars going on, people will rush to gold and they will not rush to normal Australian stocks or global stocks. We are in reporting season right now, so we're going to see some interesting companies come out with whether they've made the profit that they expected. So I would sit tight, but gold should always be part of your a diversified portfolio, but you know, generally it represents less than 10%.
If they're manipulating the currency, you're suggesting maybe gold might be the place to go. Is that is that what a lot of people are doing? Is that what
the US Treasury suggested on Wednesday last week, that there was manipulation of currencies? From my point of view, the China then rebutted that and then said, we're not going to manipulate it, and their currency went back up. Again, you and I are talking about a small business show here, John. Manipulation of currencies is well outside of our spectrum, but gold should always be part of a portfolio if you're having some shares as a diversified.
131873 is the number now. Coming up to 29 minutes past six, it is of course, Let's Talk Business show here on a Sunday night for Office Works. Now, small businesses, one of the things you constantly hear about is the question of how do you let someone go, or more bluntly, how do you fire someone? You hear it from both sides. People who say, well, I've been let go and it was unfair and I was unfairly dismissed. And then you've got people who say, well, the laws are too onerous. The question of the unfair dismissal laws. Business owners need hardworking, reliable, competent staff members. If someone's not up to scratch, then how do you let them go? Sacking a staff member can be the beginning of a long and expensive and drawn-out unfair dismissal battle. And then you get these things being dragged into hearings of different kinds. Let's go to Kate Carnell, who's the Small Business and Family Enterprise Ombudsman. Her office was set up specifically to deal with the problems that are faced by small business people. Now, she's handed down a report on the Small Business Fair Dismissal Code. She says it is not fit for purpose. So let's find out exactly how she plans to change this and whether it's going to happen. She joins us on the line now. Kate, good evening to you.
Hi, John.
All right, so what do you think's wrong with the existing code for unfair dismissals in small businesses?
Well, look, interestingly, the Labor Party instituted the Small Business Fair Dismissal Code when they brought in the Fair Work Act. That was the transition from the Howard government somewhat patchy workforce, when the Howard government got rid of unfair dismissal for businesses under 100 employees. When the Labor Party were elected, they brought in the Fair Work Act and they brought in a Small Business Fair Dismissal Code. They did that and said quite definitely that the situation, or that the Act, was very complex and it made it very difficult for small businesses to really understand the Act and to comply. So they put in this Small Business Fair Dismissal Code, which was supposed to, according to the actual quotes at the time, to say where a small business employer has genuinely complied with the code, the dismissal will be considered a fair dismissal. That's a quote from the Labor Party at the time. The problem with the Fair Dismissal Code is that lawyers have driven trucks through it. Some of the wording on it allowed it to be, I suppose, misused. There's a whole lot of wording like reasonable belief, you know, those sort of words that lawyers can play fast and loose with. So what we've done is we did quite a significant amount of work to look at whether the code was achieving its intended ends. It's not. And then how to fix it, how you could make the code do what, at the time, the Labor Party said it would do. So a small business could dismiss somebody and be confident that they were doing so fairly. It doesn't broaden the basis you can dismiss somebody. So it doesn't make it easier to dismiss somebody. It just means that, you know, if you need to dismiss somebody, it might be serious misconduct, other sorts of misconduct, even redundancy. There's some checklists that if you follow, the dismissal should be deemed to be fair. And I think that's only reasonable for small businesses.
Kate, can you define for me exactly what a small business is? Because sometimes this is a grey area. I've got a few questions for you, but can you define that for me first?
Under this particular code, it's under 15 employees. Now, that's okay. Because that's how it was put in place back, you know, when the Fair Dismissal Code was put in place. And one of the things we've done is made it clearer on how you define 15 employees under this code, because you know that can be a little difficult. So it doesn't include contractors or casuals. So it makes that very clear. And also remember that for small businesses, that an employee has to be with you for 12 months before you can dismiss them inside the first 12 months without having to go through this process, and you can't end up with an unfair dismissal scenario under normal circumstances for an employee who hasn't been with you for 12 months.
Just clarify that for me, Kate. So if I'm a small business owner and I'm employing somebody, do I have then a 12-month probation period on somebody, or is it a 6? So I can now, as a small business owner, say you can come and join me and I can dismiss you without any reason on day 364 and say that you're on your way. That's question one. Question two is, how many people are contacting you as the ombudsman about these issues? Because I think a lot of small businesses are slack and they're not looking at the laws. They're not looking. Last week we spoke about grants. Are they getting lazy, or should they really be empowered to contact you? Because the Small Business and Family Enterprise Ombudsman, I think, would be someone that you would want to talk to if you have 10 employees and you're trying to say this person's not up to scratch.
Look, absolutely. We'd love them to contact us and we can, you know, point them in the right direction. You know, there are over 14,000 unfair dismissal claims in the Fair Work Commission each year. That's been pretty standard over the last few years. But fundamentally what that means for a small business is if somebody does come back with an unfair dismissal claim, you're going to have to put in the time, the effort. Even if at the end of the day it's found that you did the right thing, the amount of time it takes, the fact that you probably have to get some legal advice and so on, is significant. And as we get told about really often, small businesses feel a need to get involved with what's called go away money. In other words, it's easier to pay somebody a couple of thousand dollars to go away rather than go through the whole process. And what we're trying to say is, look, I don't believe small businesses just dismiss people for no reason. Good staff is too hard to get. Training costs too much. And the fact is, if you've got a good employee, you want to keep them. In fact, you'll fight tooth and nail to keep a good employee. The issue is that when you employ somebody, you have to be confident that if it doesn't work out or if the business doesn't go as well as you'd hoped, that you can dismiss them and dismiss them fairly and in a way that you're not going to end up with an unfair dismissal claim and potentially significant costs as a result of that. Employers that do the wrong thing, we're not trying to protect them, not at all. You know, you're supposed to do the right thing. We're there to help you know what the right thing is. And what we've come down in this particular report is three checklists, one for serious misconduct, one for other conduct, like performance and those sorts of things, and also for redundancy. But if you follow, it should be you should be safe. You know, you've done the right thing. You've dismissed fairly. And that's really what we need, you know, really, you know, transparency here to help small businesses who want to do the right thing do it.
Well, that's right, Kate. And putting it bluntly, as a small business owner, my employees are my family members, because you only want the family working for you, and exactly right. But look, thank you so much for your time, Kate. And again, hearing about the small business...
Can I just say one thing before I go? Now, this is our paper. It's on the record. We're trying to stimulate debate in industrial relations changes that will help small businesses, make it fairer for employees as well. And the new minister, Christian Porter, has said he wants to have this conversation. You know, let's have a reasonable, transparent conversation on these sorts of changes. And I hope that's what happens as a result of this paper.
All right. Kate Carnell, as always, great to talk to you. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Kate Carnell, Small Business and Family Enterprise Ombudsman. You can find on their website that Small Business Fair Dismissal Code, which they want to change. It is, as you were saying, largely a checklist, and I have had a note here from a person who's pretty high up in HR who's saying best protection for small business is that 12-month qualifying period that employees need to meet before they can bring unfair dismissal proceedings. So, in other words, there's that period, I guess a probationary period. We should talk about that. We have mentioned it a couple of times. It is quite important, that probationary period that can be used to see if an extra employee is going to help the business grow and if they're going to work out. And if they haven't worked out within that period, you are free to let them go. But we'll talk more about that down the track, because we're going to talk about email. This is one you're looking forward to, isn't it, Scott? Because the old email, you know, which is now, you know, there's all these new ways of using the internet, but the email, one of the early ways of using the internet, is a phenomenal way to promote your business, and we're going to find out how in just one moment here on Let's Talk Business at 22 minutes to 7. 131873 is the number at 19 minutes to 7. Peter's on the line from Burnside in Victoria. Hello, Peter.
Yeah, hi, guys. Look, that call a couple of calls ago, Daryl, is absolutely right. I think the work ethic in China is far more productive than it is in Australia. Look, they don't get paid a lot, but what they do is they know, they understand that if they work hard for their employer, it can be prosperous. Now, in Australia, you know, I'd love to get paid more than what I get, but I'm not going to do it at the risk of sending my employer to the wall. Now, the cost of living is high in Australia. It's high, especially in Victoria. I mean, the Daniel Andrews government closed coal-fired power stations, and he doesn't want to explore for gas, which means our utilities and all the cost of living prices is higher, which means I have to go through my unions to fight for a better wage. Where does it stop? It's ridiculous. Governments have the power to bring down the cost of living, and they're not doing it.
Yep. All right. Okay.
Daryl, I reckon you're spot on, Daryl. Peter, sorry. Look, there's a lot of issues that you're correct on, but it's still cheaper in China than it is in Australia due to the minimum wage.
All right. 131873 is number. Look, we've got some HR questions. We can't really take HR questions. We haven't got an HR specialist here tonight. We might try and do that down the track. So if you want to leave those, and we might give some notice of that, we might do that down the track, specific HR questions that we might deal with. In the meantime, let's do our WorkWise segment. This is fantastic at 18 minutes to 7. Email. Now, we know we check our emails. I know I check mine regularly. People check their social media. Email is a very effective tool to communicate directly with your customers, and it's arguably more important now than ever before. We keep hearing about social media using Instagram and the various other forms, but the old form of email, how do you leverage it? You have a database. How do you convert it into sales? How can you make sure your emails don't look like they're spam? Gary Eckstein is an expert in this area. He is the founder of Organic Web. He's a recognized MailChimp expert. More on that in a moment. Hello, Gary.
Hey, how are you going?
Are we right about this, that email really can be the most effective form of directly communicating with customers?
Look, it's absolutely effective. Email's been around for a long time, and it continues to work. Amazon use it, all the big guys use it, and there's a reason they use it, because it's effective. However, I think things are changing a little bit. We shouldn't maybe just focus on one thing. We need to look at our marketing as a whole. We use multiple channels, social media. Email's one of those things we use, and it works better for some people, but it is still very effective, yes.
Look, I think your comment's interesting, Gary. A lot of small business owners don't know how to switch off, and they're addicted to email, and they're addicted to data and trying to find out what's going on, and they can't get away from it. But you're an expert in MailChimp, which I must admit, as the finance guru business, does use that. And I find that very effective, but as long as I'm not bombarding my customers with too much information. So what would be your advice to a small business owner on how to communicate directly and make sure that customer or that client feels important?
Well, I think there are two aspects here. The one is personalization. In other words, we already know, once we have a person's email address, we typically know their first name, for example. So let's personalize the content. And it's really simple in MailChimp and other email systems. It's very simple to address each email to each individual person. Secondly, is about targeting. If you own your own small business, you know what people are buying. You know what they're interested in, whether that's from people coming into your store or the data you have from them online or whatever. So we can then target the relevant information. For example, if you're selling women's clothing and men's clothing, you're going to try and sell the women's clothing to women and the men's clothing to men, typically. So targeting and personalization is very important.
I think that's a good point. And in terms of your database, like we get, I get so much. Last week we had a bit of a banter with John because John's in the he still opens his letterbox and gets the junk mail, whereas the junk mail for me is spam. And you'd be right up my alley there on Gary, because we get more spam than he does because he's only just new to email and new to the internet, a couple of years older than me. But how many MailChimp emails would go to spam, and how do we manage that as a business owner if you're trying to still communicate promotions or different, you know, things that are promoting your business or different discounts?
Yeah, look, there are literally hundreds of factors that spam filters look for. But as the actual sender, what we can do, and the first thing is just to give it a go, right? Give it a go. But definitely don't send too much information. You mentioned earlier about sending too often. We don't want to send too often. Don't send too much information. We can do certain technical things, such as what we call authenticating domains, and there's a lot of information online about that. We want to have words. We want to have correct spelling. All those sort of things are really important. I guess, to sum it up, what you would do as a small business owner, look at those emails that are in your junk folder. Don't click on anything, but look at them. And look at what they're doing, the words they're using, dear beneficiary, those sort of things. But don't do that. We know what spam emails look like. Just don't let yours look like that.
Yeah, that's actually fantastic advice. Look at the ones that have been picked up by the spam and then go, all right, well, I don't want to make mine look like this, and I'll tailor them. That's a very good piece of advice. All right, your website is organicweb.com.au. People can learn more about all of this. That is fantastic. Thank you so much for your time tonight, Gary.
Thank you for having me.
Gary Eckstein, organicweb.com.au, and Officeworks want to help you and your business make bigger things happen. Might be sharing clever marketing tips to help boost sales, or by providing free templates to help you with invoicing, even hiring new staff. The Officeworks worksite website is officeworks.com.au/workwise, and that Workwise segment is thanks to Officeworks, helping you make bigger things happen. Of course, regular listeners to this show would know all about single-touch payroll, and it can be difficult, the old start of a new financial year. Single-touch payroll, or STP, is the big ATO compliance change that's affecting all businesses. Now's the time to have a look at Reckon.com. Get yourself STP ready, streamline your business admin at the same time. Reckon has a choice of three STP solutions to cater for businesses of every size. There's Reckon One, which is payroll and accounting. For just $10 a month, you can go for Reckon One Payroll, which covers all your employees, for just $5 a month, or download Reckon STP app. It's free for business with up to four employees. So if you've got up to four employees, the Reckon STP app is the go. You can't get away from single-touch payroll, but you can make it as easy as possible with Reckon. See how simple it can be for you at that website, reckon.com. Now, we wind up each program with some advice on growing your business. Well, I guess this might be advice on keeping the growth going. Peter Switzer from growyourbusiness.com.au joins us now to talk about wage and profit theft. So I'm guessing here, Pete, we're talking about both sides of the equation, are we?
Yeah, I kind of inspired, I think last week or week before, we touched on wage theft, and you know, particularly some of the celebrity chefs got found out. And I think there's a lot of businesses actually make a mistake, and some intentionally make a mistake. But I also thought about the profit theft side of it, because there are two sides to the coin. And I've identified probably four areas where people in business, employees actually steal profit. And I think two are intentional and two are accidental. They can steal staff, they can steal stuff from your business, they can steal clients. But these are the accidental ones, I think. Stealing time by misusing time on computers and whatever, and also stealing potential business by not actually thinking about what you can do in your spare time when you're not doing precisely what you've been hired to do. And when you try to think about, when you look at each one, you know, stealing stuff, very hard to stop. You can't use surveillance in your business. That would be terrible. Stealing clients, I think your contract can actually do something to stop people stealing clients if they leave the business. Stealing time and stealing potential for the business, I think you can only get that by talking to your staff and inspiring them and actually educating them. But that when you do have spare time, you should be thinking about, how can I improve our customer service? How can I be better at my business? How can I do self-improvement? All that stuff, as a boss, I'd be happy to see my employees doing, rather than, say, shopping on the internet on, what's that day after Black Friday? You know, that when everyone goes online and the sales go
Black
through the
Friday,
roof.
Black Friday, what's the other one? Oh,
Click crazy or click frenzy, whatever it is.
We know that a lot of people do misuse business time, and effectively that is stealing profit.
I think you've got to wear that at some stage, Switz. Like, we had Kate Carnell on, who's the Family Enterprise Ombudsman, talking about unfair dismissal battles and the fact that now we can have 12-month probationary periods before someone can be sacked or told that they're not necessarily a part of the business. Has that happened in your firm or some of your clients? Because if someone's online or doing some social media or buying online, is that the time that you say, well, hang on, I'm going to dismiss you, I'm a business under 15 employees, it's time for you to go?
Well, now, I reckon that could really kill the ethos in the business. I reckon you, as a business leader, you've got to talk to your staff around the idea that, you know, you pursuing private stuff when in actual fact you should be trying to make the business better, because ultimately if the business is more profitable, I can pay higher wages, I can reward you. I think that's the leadership piece that can actually, you know, stop your employees inadvertently or unintentionally stealing from you. And I think that's the kind of message I want to put across today, is that in many ways it takes a great leader to understand how you can get the best out of your staff, and sometimes, you know, bouncing them in front of everybody because they're shopping on the internet might not be the greatest idea.
I want to ask you this, because something stood out for me when you say stealing clients. You and I know situations where really good salespeople have developed a really good relationship with someone, so they bring a client to a business because of their work, the work that they've done and their relationship. So really that client's theirs, isn't it, to a large extent, rather than the businesses.
In your mind, John, but I think if you're an employer paying that person, you kind of think that you share the client, and I think in deep down you think you own the client. But I'm sure Scotty's seen it in financial planning. Some financial planners can leave and they can steal a client very, very easily.
Yep. All right. Hey, Switz, your website's growyourbusiness.com.au. That's very interesting today. Thank you so much. We'll talk next
week. Cheers, guys.
There he is, Peter Switzer. Now, let's wind it up, because we've got Scott Hayward, our finance guru. He's Frosty the Snowman today. He's in the snowfields, mate. What's your final tip of the day have you got for us this afternoon or this evening?
Well, it's the snowball moment. It's the there's no business like snow business. But I think the interesting thing that we talked about today was terminating a staff's employment for an employer is stressful and can sometimes be a regrettable situation for most business owners. And I think tonight we heard from Kate, and she was fantastic in educating us. And a lot of small business owners will not pick up the phone call and say, what's the process in making sure that I'm doing it right, making sure I'm doing it properly? And Kate Carnell from the Family Enterprise Ombudsman of Small Business is someone that we should be in touch with as small business owners.
All right. You have a safe trip home. I know the roads are jam-packed from the snowfields back to the cities. Whatever you're doing, hope you have a great week. We'll be back with you next week for Officeworks, of course, helping you make bigger things happen. Have a look at their website.